Welcome to the SF Squeecast, in which a group of science fiction and fantasy professionals squee about things SFnal in a never-ending panel discussion of vague positivity. We are live at WindyCon! I am your moderator, Lynn Thomas. I am joined today by Squeecast regulars, Elizabeth Baer.
Hello!
Shauna McGuire.
Yo.
Kat Valenti.
Hi.
Michael Damian Thomas.
Hello!
And our very special guest today, Jim Hines.
I'm wearing Elizabeth Baer's scarf.
Jim was actually our first special guest way back in year one.
Yep, back in the dawn of time. Yeah,
you were the
very first, Jim. Yeah.
Full circle.
We were gentle yet masterful.
Was it good for all of you?
Yeah, we had you back, so
I'm uncomfortable. Yeah,
that took long.
Okay, so typically what we do with this sort of thing is that we do a panel discussion, and that requires a topic of some sort. So,
were we going to do happy things first?
Yes, we're going to do some happy things. So what we're going to ask each of the panelists to do is to volunteer a thing that made them happy in recent memory in the land of SFF. I will go first so everyone else has a chance to actually like think of something. Things that have made me happy. My happy thing is that at this convention, the charity of choice this year is the Red Door Shelter, which is a no-kill shelter, and they have a stripy kitten named Twinkie for everyone to play with, which is the best thing ever. And I hope that they raise lots and lots of money with the charity auction. So that is my happy thing for WindyCon.
Okay, yeah, con chairs, get on this. All cons should come with happy kittens. We should have a happy kitten room. And the litter boxes should be in the next room.
Yeah, that's how you keep it happy.
My happy thing recently is that I just read Kelly Sue's, started reading her Captain Marvel.
Yes.
And it's fantastic. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Kelly Sue DeConnick. The first trade volume is called In Pursuit of Flight. And it's made of awesome. And Captain Marvel movie coming next year.
And
so
Captain Marvel
now's
movie
the time
coming
to catch up.
Yay! You can't see it, but we're all dancing.
Yes,
at the podium.
We're all doing a little happy. See, now we have to narrate for the people at home who are going to be listening to this podcast after the fact. So,
and
so,
kick.
You would not believe the scissor kicks that Michael can do.
Yeah. Well, that's my happy thing.
Oh, uncomfortable.
Okay. Anyone else have a happy thing they'd like to share?
So I was at FairyCon last week, and there is a movie theater not very far away. And after the con ended on Sunday, we were like, we'll go see a movie. Didn't really feel like seeing Interstellar because too many of my friends have already told me their opinion on it. And there was this movie called Birdman. And I'd never heard of it. We'd never heard a word about it. And just went and saw it, and I walked out of the theater almost in tears because I forgot what it felt like when I like something and have no complaints about it. When I just love it, and things are good and not terrible, and it didn't upset me or make me angry in my feminist spaces or narrative or anything. It was just wonderful. It's called Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. It is, in fact, speculative. If you are a theater geek and a superhero geek, and you liked Michael Keaton in Batman, this is the movie for you. It's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I don't want to spoil anything about it because I think it's much better seen kind of raw. But it's kind of like those old, you know, 70s or 80s plays where people talk about theater quite a bit, but then there's a whole bunch of speculative elements thrown on top of it. It's actually all shot in nearly one continuous take. It's not quite, but they were incredibly long takes. So if you like that 8-minute opening shot thing, boy howdy, Birdman is the movie. Because it's 2 hours long and it's almost without cuts. It's just brilliant and it's just beautiful. It's like Batman meets My Dinner with Andre. I was so filled with joy. I just don't have anything bad to say about it. And even things I like, there's a couple of things here and there I'd change. And I was filled with so much hope for the future because the people still make movies because they want to make movies. The makers of the movie made it for $15 million and told the studio, like, we're probably not going to make any money on this. It'll make money on DVD. And they were like, fine. It released in two cities in August. Yesterday had its nationwide release because people started talking about it and really enjoyed it. The previews are baffling. They seem to have nothing to do with what the movie's actually about. Just go see it. returns hope for the future of movies to me.
And there is a movie theater right next door to this hotel. I'm just saying.
So we're going now?
Oh, yeah.
No, we have to.
We're taking the panel.
I don't mean to oversell.
I would like to draw the moderator's attention to a potential episode title in Kat's happy tirade, which was, "It doesn't make me angry in my feminist spaces."
As intrepid Squeakcast listeners know, one of us will say something, typically Shauna, and I think she holds the record for the number of
at
titles that she's generated.
At least 25
of them, yes. Typically, we will have a turn of phrase that just sounds ridiculous out of context that becomes our episode title, and it's always drawn from something one of us said during the podcast. So, Shauna, did you have a happy thing?
Daniel Handler read my porn out loud to an audience of 300. Daniel Handler is also known as Lemony Snicket.
Uh-huh.
The porn was about Count Olaf. He was nowhere near drunk enough for what we made him do that night. 5 other people also wrote porn. It was also about Count Olaf.
That's a lot of porn.
It was a lot of, it's for an event called Shipwreck. We write porn about things.
And is this available online anywhere?
Thank God, no.
Jim's only interested
he
for a friend.
He asked for no particular reason.
I'm asking for a friend.
The moderator of Shipwreck now says that for the rest of my life, she's holding against me the fact that I wrote her an email that included the phrase crustacean penetration.
Across the nation?
No, just in the orphan's shack.
So that's one of those, my next band name will be.
Yeah.
Crustacean penetration.
Yep.
Michael, do you have anything happy?
Well, yes, I do. We came back from World Fantasy Convention last weekend, where friend of the podcast and former guest, Sophia Samatar, won the Best Novel World Fantasy Award for her brilliant A Stranger in Alondria.
Yes.
Yay!
We're all incredibly happy for Sophia.
And she announced that the sequel will be coming out from Small Beer Press, along with a collection of her short fiction. So we are extremely happy for Sophia.
Yes. Jim?
I'm still kind of stuck on the porn thing. No, I started watching The Flash a few weeks ago, and while not a perfect show, so it does not meet Kat's level of squee, it's fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It brings back something that I've been looking for and not finding in very many places lately. And suddenly there's a superhero show on TV that it remembered how to laugh and how to be goofy, and that superhero stuff can be corny and fun. And so,
wait,
yeah, that was very exciting.
So it's not just grim dark, full of grim darkness with lots of pain?
Man pain
and angst.
Man pain.
Man pain and abs.
Yes.
That's Arrow.
Working out your man pain with.
Well, that was where I was going with that. Yes.
We did a panel about that at a Capricorn.
Man pain and abs?
About abs?
Yes.
No, it was called the Shirtless Workout Rating Scale Panel, and Arrow was what generated the idea for the panel. So it was sort of an attempt to turn around at the sort of, as opposed to the male gaze thing, it's the female gaze. So we were rating television shows and movies solely on the basis of how good the shirtless workouts were. And Arrow, oddly enough, was our baseline.
Yeah.
And Roadhouse.
Yes, there was a lot of discussion of Roadhouse. With a nod to Colin Firth for not being shirtless, but being wet in Pride and Prejudice.
Sometime when we're not being recorded, I'll tell you a story about Roadhouse and one of my college dorm mates.
That's just
with
cruel.
You know that.
We're running a bit blue for 11:30 on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, well, you know.
Okay, all right, moving on.
And we are moving on. Yeah, this is where you find out what a terrible moderator I really am.
That's half the charm of Squeakcast.
Yeah, half the charm is I'm not in control of this thing at all. Okay, so are we going to do a panel topic briefly before we open it up to be stumped by our audience, or are we just going to
No, chaos rules.
Panel topic.
Thank you, Kat.
Okay, so panel topic. We need one.
It was the SF
community.
So
awesome things that the SF community does, because we should recognize that, because sometimes the internet makes us weep for humanity. And as an antidote to the internet making us weep for humanity, we should remind ourselves and others of the cool things that our community does. And the one that I want to point out is one that Jim did last year, or was it the year before? It was the fundraiser.
2012, 2013.
Jim did. It started with his ridiculous poses, and he used those ridiculous poses to raise money for the Aicardi Syndrome Foundation.
Yeah,
and through the power of the internet, Jim and several colleagues raised, what was it, $15,000? $15,000 to benefit the Aicardi Syndrome Foundation, and that is near to our Thomas-based hearts because our daughter Caitlin is someone who lives with Aicardi Syndrome, so that was especially dear to us.
No, it was, I mean, when we went to the family conference, the head of the foundation was almost in tears thankful because basically the SF community, because Jim did, you know, he was doing his poses of ridiculous cover poses, of, you know, of female characters in novels, and I think most of you are familiar with it. But because of the community getting behind this fundraiser, because Caitlin Syndrome only affects about 2,000 girls in the world, so there's not a lot of fundraising money. And it tends to be just the families doing little bake sales.
We're at bake sale level.
Basically, Jim was able to give enough money so we could get a professional website and fund part of the convention.
Yeah.
So
there's a conference for families.
And others, too. John Scalzi participated. Pat Rothfuss, Charlie Strauss, Mary Robinette Kowal.
I mean, you say that the head of the foundation was almost in tears. I just want to add, a lot of people who saw those poses were in a similar
At any rate, that is the thing that we are grateful for, because it is always wonderful when our community comes together to create silliness and awesome for the sake of good. So,
curiously enough, my thing is also a charity initiative. And it's Pat Rothfuss's World Builders.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which Pat Rothfuss, for those of you who don't know, runs a charity every year that is a fundraiser for Heifer International. And Heifer International is one of those my favorite kind of assistance program. It is a boots on the ground kind of, we go in, we do one good practical thing to give people a boost, and then we back off and let them, you know, take care of themselves. What they do is they buy livestock for people in poor farming communities. And they are, if you do the research, they are one of the better charities in terms of turning money into actual productive action. And what Pat does with the help of one of his assistants, Maria, who's actually running the entire World Builders thing now, is gets a whole bunch of science fiction and fantasy professionals to donate books, donate time, give away Tuckerizations, Scott and I suffered a hangover on behalf of this charity last year because we did a very, very, very drunken audio review of the Middle Hobbit movie, which is available on YouTube along with drink recipes. Random acts of weirdness, you know, and as the charity approaches its goals, more random acts of weirdness get unlocked. So I urge you to check out the World Builders site, see if it's something you can get behind, and maybe win a book or a Tuckerization. It could happen.
Yeah, there are lots and lots of awesome prizes, often the sorts of things that are not generally available. I know, for instance, that Neil Gaiman tends to sign a lot more stuff for World Builders than he typically does at this point in other places. So, relevant to your interests as fans, and really doing something wonderful for the rest of the world that we live in, which is also excellent, because yay. So, other stuff we want to talk about?
I mean, I would really like to highlight the con committees of the conventions all over the country that bring us here and that we go to on our own. I mean, keeping fandom alive in the real world, the non-internet spaces where we can see each other face-to-face, it's really important. And the world of fandom has changed a lot in the last 20 years, but these conventions and these spaces have stayed constant. And it's an incredible amount of work. Just if you don't work on a convention, you have no idea what it takes to put one of these events together. Even an event half this size takes more man hours than you can imagine.
Yes.
And people do it for free. They do it because they love it. They do it because they love books. And we owe them so much.
Yeah, we try. I mean, I've done con committees, and we try when we, you know, to always, when we're at a convention, find department heads and thank them for their work, because this is a, you know, and we often focus on, you know, and I know con runners, this is hard, because often at the end of a con, if one or two things go wrong, that's what we focus on, and we forget the 10 million things that had to happen and went right. you know, that we weren't all out in a parking lot wondering what's going on because the doors are locked.
I've been to that con. Those are the cons that make us appreciate the con runners even more.
Yes.
And they allow authors to be able to meet their fans face to face and make new fans and new friends. I've met so many of my dear and close friends at conventions. It's just, it is the fuel that keeps us all going.
Shauna?
What?
Do you have anything you'd like to add?
There are no wasps in this room.
Yet.
We could import some.
Or not.
Are we? Over to you, Jim.
You talked about the internet making us cry. And yes, I am part of the crying internet community and all of that. At the same time, you know, as much as we're crying, you know, I also see science fiction and fantasy and fandom recognizing that there are problems in the world and problems in our community and wading right into those conversations and saying, hey, this thing is broken. Let's fix it. And maybe we do it clumsily and maybe it gets loud and ugly sometimes, but a lot of the world is busy pretending the problems don't exist. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, I'm seeing our family, our communities trying, you know, reaching out and saying, no, we want this to be for everybody. We want everyone to get involved and to be a part of this really cool and fun and potentially hopeful community and genre. And I think that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Agreed. I think that all of us have, I think we would all say we became better editors and writers and everything just because of this ongoing online discussion. Because we can pop in, pop out, and we think. We think about what are we doing? Why are we doing this? And, you know, we can reach fans and talk to fans and other creators, and it's, you know, in almost real time, rather than it being every 6 months we all meet at one hotel.
Like I said, we got 6 months worth of yelling at each other to do.
Yeah. Well, may as well get it out of the way.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're doing all 6 months worth of yelling at each other at the con, that cuts into your drinking time significantly.
Not to mention the kitty gets upset.
Yeah, and we don't want to upset Twinkie.
Nothing upsets that kitty.
That kitty's going to be therapy.
That kitty is bulletproof.
That kitty is traumatized.
Oh, that kitty just said, oh, look, a Klingon. Whatever, pet me.
Yeah.
Kapla, right under the chin.
Yep. Pretty much. Okay, so at this point, I think it's time to bite the bullet, as it were, and open up to audience participation. So now is your chance with a group of science fiction and fantasy professionals sitting up here to ask us random questions and see what the heck comes out of our mouths, because what could possibly go wrong?
Be gentle.
Way too.
Wow.
Those,
oh, we're waiting for
the
that.
Hands are flying.
The hands are flying. Okay, the person in the tie.
What is your personal favorite science fiction or fantasy book that you did not write?
Our personal favorite science fiction and fantasy books that we did not write.
Well, I discussed mine on the Squeakcast already, which is Little Big by John Crowley. Mm-hmm. It's a gently post-apocalyptic Midsummer Night's Dream, and you all should read it. The Last Unicorn, Peter Beagle, which has, I think, an undeserved reputation as a twee little children's book, but is an amazingly beautifully written and poignant and kind of terrible novel about the trade-offs we all make as adults, choosing between responsibility and freedom. And it's also a heck of a lot of fun. So this is a deeply important novel that's also fun.
Those are the best kind.
Yeah.
Can I have two?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to go with Good Omens, Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett, which is just this. I got some woos. Recognize that on the podcast.
Are you doing a discussion?
Hmm?
At 1, 2 p.m.?
There's a discussion apparently at 2 p.m. What's the room?
While she's looking, you have superb projection.
Yes.
Two people.
Yes.
Maple.
In the Maple room.
In the Maple room.
So we have a discussion that none of your online listeners can come to.
That's right.
Yes.
Cool.
It sucks to be them.
Well,
should have come to WindyCon, guys.
Yep, should have come to WindyCon.
Second one is called Hellspark by Janet Kagan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's less widely known, which is tragic because Kagan was brilliant and warm and just amazing human being.
I've got two that are both the kind of book that I hug to myself and say, where has this been all my life, every time I read them. The first is A Wrinkle in Time, which I have read almost annually since I was a teen, and The Suck Fairy never visits that very first book. I love it so hard. It's by Madeline L'Engle. A book that I came to later, because I'm by many reader standards new to genre. I've only been in SF for 10 years now, so my to-be-read list will kill me. The books will literally topple over and just beat me to death. But a book that I came to relatively recently that I hugged and said, where was this when I was a teenager, is The Privilege of the Sword by Ellen Kushner, which is all about a teen girl coming into her own and learning swordplay and busting up a society that doesn't understand what to do with her. It's just so wonderful, I wanted to hug it to bits. Those are my two at the moment. It will change, because I'm one of those people.
For me, it's China Mountain Zhang by Maureen McHugh, which is just one of the most intricate and beautiful novels ever read. And my teen book, which stays with me, is It by Stephen King, which I revisit occasionally.
Seanan?
What?
Did you read a book?
Mermaid Song, Alida Van Gores. You'll never find a copy. I'm sorry, apparently I'm a hipster today, but you'll never find it. It's out of print. It was written by...
I was putting a mustache on.
Okay.
Mustache.
That's your hipster mustache.
Thank you.
Aww.
It was written by the wife of an American diplomat to Sweden. She had one book in her. She wrote the book. She's like, peace out, yo.
Mic drop.
But it's a mermaid eco-thriller with song cycles in it.
Neat. Okay, next question. We had someone who was in a striped shirt, and then you're next, and then the gentleman in the red shirt is fourth. So go ahead.
And don't get me wrong, I'm a cat person. I love cats. I have a cat at home. I love the idea of having a kitten that I can
go to. Okay.
But I thought our charity was for bunnies this year.
It is a shelter. The question was about the charity that is doing that is for this year, the Red Door Shelter. They specialize in cats, dogs, and bunnies.
Okay.
I believe they are planning to have a bunny tomorrow.
A Flemish giant.
A Flemish giant.
Oh, my God.
My favorite kind of bunny. Oh, it is.
For those of you listening at home, everybody in the room just did the anime flail.
You've got to keep in mind that bunnies aren't just cute like everybody supposes.
They've got those hoppy legs.
And twitchy little noses.
Yeah.
It must be bunnies, Jim.
Careful, we're getting on copyright.
Okay, that's it. Fair use. Next question.
A superhero question.
Okay.
What do you guys think the better Ms. Marvel is, the old Ms. Marvel or the new Ms. Marvel?
I'm going to repeat your question so the podcast listeners can hear. She asked what the panel thought was the best Ms. Marvel, the old Ms. Marvel or the new Ms. Marvel.
Yes.
Exactly. I think it's lovely not to have to choose.
With a side order of Binary and Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, now that old Miss Marvel is Captain Marvel, we can have both.
Yep.
And I think we're very happy.
Yep. All is well with the Marvel family.
Yay.
For now. Yes. Wait, I had another person before you, and then you're next. Gentleman in the red shirt.
What do you think really needs to change about how people use the internet to make it better?
What do we think really needs to change about people who use the internet in order to make it better?
Manners. Yeah, we could all try to make our grandmothers proud.
A tone argument.
It's not about tone.
If the rest of the internet would just give up and agree with me, we'd be great.
Wait, they should agree with me.
Only when you agree with me.
Okay, please, no fistfights on the podcast.
What if we squee while we punch each other?
I don't know. So.
As a slightly serious answer, I do think it would help more help with most people when they are at their angriest, close the computer, walk away, breathe, think, and then come back to respond.
If your heart rate is over 140 beats per minute, your computer should lock you out.
Yeah.
When your blood pressure spikes, your keyboard should lock. I think that's...
That does allow for no post-exercise tweeting, I'm just saying.
Fair enough. I think that God knows I've gotten angry on the internet, and I think I've been right to on occasion, and I think some positive things have come out of it. I've also said some misjudged things. Maybe a breathalyzer.
That also helps.
Yeah.
We all need, like, a personal assistant who looks over our shoulders and just kind of like the dungeon master. Are you sure you want to do that?
Yeah. I want you to think about the negatives on that roll.
I want you to make a wisdom roll.
You're wearing chainmail and you want to dive into the whirlpool. Not that my character ever did that.
I'm pretty sure it's an illusion. I disbelieve in the whirlpool. It is an illusion.
Yeah. How'd that work out for you, Mark?
Not well. Not well.
You are falling out of the plane. I parry the earth.
Not a good plan.
I have pluses to dodge.
The sad thing was this individual rolled well enough to be successful and kind of ricocheted off. Never to be seen again.
That's terrifying. That's really terrifying.
I think a more honest answer is that in dealing with the internet, you know, the less facile answer, in dealing with the internet, and in dealing with our own relationships with people on the internet, if we would all sort of learn to pause and remember that 99.9% of the people we're dealing with on the internet are actually real human beings with real feelings.
Yeah.
And the rest are either bots, trolls, or Greg Egan, who I'm pretty sure is either an alien intelligence or an AI.
I find a lot of the time...
That's a compliment, by the way.
Presumption of goodwill.
Yeah, presumption of goodwill.
You know, at least by default, assuming that this person is not maliciously trying to hurt me, maybe they're confused, maybe I'm misreading. You know, and if it continues, then we move on to booting them off the site. But at least giving people the benefit of the doubt in the beginning.
And not having to make every conversation be about oneself. You know, sometimes just shut up and listen.
We're not having to take sides on everything.
Yeah,
I think understanding as well that there isn't really a difference anymore between the internet and the real world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of the bad things that go on the internet are partly stem from the fact that people still kind of think it doesn't count if it's online. Online is just some weird version of Recess, where it doesn't have an effect on what happens during the school day, but it isn't like that. Like, it isn't. And the fact is that everybody you talk to on the internet is a real and breathing person, except for Twitter bots. And, like, if you wouldn't say it to them in person, you probably shouldn't say it online, because that is saying it to them in person. And it's only going to, those spaces are only going to melt further and further into the real world.
Yeah.
Okay. So next question was this person hit down here.
I was wondering, since I've not really had a chance to ask so many authors the same questions once again, what is your favorite outfit to write in? The bathrobe, or are you actually dressed, or what?
Favorite outfit to write in.
We have to wear clothes to write?
No.
Yeah, the scary part is, don't you do it on lunch break at work?
Technically.
Well, the other question is, do you have an office now?
It does not have a door. I have an open cubicle. But I had been looking for ways to get my coworkers to stop disturbing me during my lunch.
That'll do it.
Yeah,
you're invisible now, baby.
Yep.
I generally write in whatever I would be wearing around the house, usually not pajamas, but yoga pants or, you know, leggings and sweater. My house in the wintertime is extremely cold, and I've occasionally posted on my blog photos of what I write in the wintertime. This is a Victorian house that's 114 years old and has the original windows, and in central Massachusetts. And I am usually, like, wearing wool leggings, a wool skirt, 3 or 4 sweaters, you know, fingerless mittens, and then I'm curled up with a heating pad.
And a scarf.
And a scarf. Often a scarf. I'll want that back eventually, Jim.
Define eventually.
Say by the end of the panel.
I think my editing clothes at this point. Michael knows I'm having a serious editing day when I come downstairs in yoga pants and a t-shirt with a sweatshirt over it and very toasty socks.
Yeah.
Because my feet get cold, so I'm all about the toasty socks.
Writing gives everyone cold feet.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Oh, no, that wasn't, I don't know what I was doing there. I've actually taken to putting on grown-up clothes and lipstick. Ooh. In order to go down to my office and work, so the book will take me seriously. it helps me feel like I have prepared to work rather than I'm in the same space as my non-work life. However, if I'm really close to finishing it, then it's moose pants and a sweater all the way. I have PJs that have moose on them. I call them my moose pants. They're not pants made out of moose. The lipstick does help. Okay. It does. Give it a shot.
Okay, now here's my really embarrassing admission for the convention. I've been known to, like, method write and put on clothes that my character that I'm attempting to write that day would be wearing, which, it amazingly enough, sometimes helps.
I'm currently reading Care and Memory, which is about your 19th century...
Seamstress.
So woman girl. Seamstress, yes.
Yes.
Corset?
Did you write in a corset? I did not write in a corset. I have worn a corset.
Yeah.
I own one. But no, I did not write in a corset. That would be very uncomfortable after a while. That would give you a place to prop the laptop.
Not really ergonomic, though.
Not really ergonomic.
Shannon, I see that you have a Big Hero 6 head.
It's her Baymax. He's taking care of her.
Can't have it. Okay. I guess it's cute.
Do we have another question from the crowd? Yes, go ahead.
I have to be careful to say this right. It used to be 10, 15 years ago, we were afraid that internet people would find us in real life, and now we're afraid that real life people will find us on the internet. Are there things that you don't really want to tell us about on the internet, but that we really should know about? You just wouldn't want us to hear it.
So you want us to say this. For an internet podcast.
Nope.
No. My publisher's legal counsel would advise me not to answer that question.
My rule of internet is that I don't post anything to the internet that I am not willing to have be on the front page of my local newspaper. So yeah. That when I am being the internet version of me, everything that you see is me, but it's the version of me that I would be willing for my dad to see if he ever had internet access, which he doesn't, thank goodness.
Looping back to things that people should remember about the internet a little bit, that's an important thing to remember. We only post what we want to share. If you go to my Twitter feed, you'll know every time I have a cookie. Because I'm not allowed to have that many cookies. You know, I would live on cookies if I let myself, so I don't let myself. And I thus get very excited when I have a cookie. And this has led to several people accusing me of having an eating disorder. Because they have decided that the only things I eat are the things I tweet about. And I am a lot more likely to tweet, yay, I have a cookie, than yay, I have a big bowl of broccoli.
So the problem is that we need to start thinking about doing artistic pictures of kale?
No, the problem is you need to remember that everyone, no matter how open and honest their internet life seems to be, is not sharing 100% of what goes on in their world. There will always be pieces left out, and sometimes they're the broccoli pieces. They are the things that we are less excited about, or that we think people will be less excited about, or that we just don't feel like justifying to a bunch of acquaintances and relative strangers.
Yeah.
And when you assume that a person's life is only what you can see on the internet, that is 100% of who and what they are, it becomes a lot easier to go, people on the internet aren't wholly rounded, complicated individuals like I am.
Yeah.
I eat broccoli.
Yeah. I mean, if you went by the metric of what people post to the internet, you would assume that I cease to exist most weekends.
Yeah.
Because most of my internet posting happens during the weekday, because part of what I do is, my day job, I'm a librarian, and I do a lot of professionally based internet stuff.
Yeah.
And on the weekends, I tend to be less visible because we're doing family things, or we're, you know, we're going to Target, which is deeply exciting to exactly me. You know, so
I bought 2 gallons of fake blood at Target last week.
See?
On sale?
On sale?
On sale. It was $7. My sister doesn't know I have it.
So does she listen to the podcast?
She doesn't listen to the podcast.
Oh.
So I'm going to wait. Nope. She pays attention to is Facebook, and I didn't put it on Facebook.
Oh.
So I'm going to wait a couple more weeks till we're far enough past Halloween that she assumes there can be no more fake blood in the world. And then I still have that secondhand wedding gown I bought for the last production of Evil Dead the Musical, so I'm going to carry the fuck out of her. And that is the danger of ignoring someone's life in both the real world and internet spaces.
Yes.
She knew this was coming, but she paid attention.
To jump on that sort of, and a little bit, for me, it's, you know, sometimes I will tweet in a moment of irritation about something specific in our life, like, because Kate, you know, as we brought up earlier, our daughter is got many complicated medical issues, so there'll be some days I am dealing with doctors, insurance companies, other stuff, and I may grouse for one tweet, and people who do not have, I'm not going to give the entire story of what's going on, I may just grouse. But then people on the internet, and this is, gets back to they are well-meaning, they want to come in and then help me,
yeah.
and start giving all this unsolicited advice about how to navigate systems that I know how to navigate, I'm just irritated because I'm in the middle of that navigation, and then to have 20 tweets going, have you gone to this kind of doctor? Have you tried this kind of thing? Have you? It's like, well, yes, but I wasn't about to give the novel of Caitlin's medical file so that you, just because I was angry about one medical appointment.
That's actually a great piece of advice, because, in general, and one that I have been trying more to adopt. Before you answer what you think is a request for advice or help on the internet, check the end of the sentence for a question mark. If there is no actual question mark, the person may just be bitching. Then parse the sentence to see if it might be a rhetorical question.
Where did all these fucking wasps come from? I don't think you can help me unless you're holding a box marked live wasps and standing in my driveway, and then the help better not come in the form of, oops, my bad. That's not help.
Just point meaningfully at the box and waggle your eyebrows. This is where the fucking wasps came from.
Okay, who else wants to stump the panel?
Oh,
go ahead.
If you were a piece of pie, what kind of pie would you be and why?
Pumpkin pie.
Got pumpkin.
It. Called it.
Yeah.
Cherry.
Also pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
We are the most sincere patch.
Yes.
You are the most sincere patch. I would probably be, I think I'm a chicken pot pie.
Ooh. I'm a rebel. I would be cheesecake.
Ooh. Technically a pie.
Yeah. It's baked in a crust.
Yeah. That was good rules lawyering there, Jim.
Yeah.
Why, yes. A Chicago style pizza.
Oh. Also technically a pie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big brick of cheese. That sounds about right.
Oh. Cold.
No, teasing, because I know.
Yeah.
We are both incredibly cheesy. You can tell this when you come to our house at the holidays, because our house vomits holiday-based things. And it's all sort of media-based, holiday-based things, and the cheesier, the better.
Well, especially anything with peanuts and, you know, Snoopy.
Yeah, like Charlie Brown just kind of takes over our house during the winter holidays.
Well, it starts with Great Pumpkin, and then it never stops.
Yeah. So, although we have never actually done the Thanksgiving where it's toast and jelly beans and pretzels and popcorn.
Because you said
sometime.
No last time.
I know how you get without protein, honey.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, that needs
chopped.
A maybe toast with peanut butter?
Yeah, we have to put peanut butter on the toast instead of butter.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, that's not going to go well because we crash too hard. Okay, so, next question.
You know, I've got some advice about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I found that as I've grown older, that I've developed more and more pet peeves. One was fellow African Americans that say avalanche instead of ambulance or ambulance. It drives me crazy. What are your recently developed pet peeves?
Recently developed pet peeves.
Trinity syndrome. The plot thing where there's this awesome female character who is really great for the first two-thirds of the movie and acts as a mentor toward the male protagonist who is a complete nebbish, and then in the last third of the movie, suddenly she's there to be rescued or otherwise useless. That thing. Oh! I saw it, and now I can't unsee it.
No Lego movie. Everything is not awesome.
No! No Lego movie. No. How dare you? Ahem.
Yeah.
So one of mine that I've just started noticing everywhere is that between 60% and 70% of comedy these days seems to be the creation of portmanteaus. Portmanteau is squishing two words together. Unfortunately, I'm sleepy, so the only example that's coming to my mind is the one that made me go, everybody needs to stop doing that, that's not even clever. So the young child in the audience, put your hands over your ears.
Children, just cover your ears.
It's not a good thing. On Archer, Mallory called Cheryl a whore and an idiot, a whoredian. That's not even funny. It's not funny. But I started noticing it everywhere, that every sitcom, even shows that are not ostensibly comedies, every sketch, people are trying to create these catchwords by shoving two other words together. And that is not funny in and of itself. You actually have to make some other joke. Just because I took this one and this one and I made it this one does not make it funny. That's just blocks. That's just using.
Other pet peeves?
I am unable to not see the fact that somebody told filmmakers and such about the Smurfette principle. And they all went, oh, if there's only one woman, it's bad. So if there are two women in a group of six or seven, that's gender balance. Mm-hmm. And that's really a problem for me. I love the NCIS shows, but they all have the exact same gender balance. And it's two guys to one girl. So that people will never get confused and think this is a show for women. And it's like that on almost everything. The ratio of men to women must be 2-1, even if you're not trying to set up love triangles. Even in the films where people are applauding it, Big Hero 6. I did enjoy the heck out of Big Hero 6. And people keep saying, oh, look, better gender balance than the Avengers. Gosh, you're right. Two women on a team of six. That's much better than the Avengers. We have a problem. I have a knife. but it's making it hard for me to enjoy things because I can't not, much like Bear with the Trinity syndrome, I can't not see it happening. So I'm coming out of things going, why must men outnumber me 2-1 in every setting? Why was that character even male? You know, why was that? It doesn't make sense. I'm not saying 100% of the time it needs to not be there. But, like, iCarly was not written off as a show just for girls, and iCarly had an equal ratio of men and of male and female characters, because most of them were underage, they weren't men and women, but equal ratio of male and female characters, and the core cast for a while was two girls and a guy. Mm-hmm. But then they added Gibby, and Gibby's little brother, whose name I never bothered to remember because he was annoying as crap, and they never added any more recurring female characters. So we took a show that had had two males and two females and turned it into four males and two females and continued to say it had gender balance.
Mm-hmm. My most recent pet peeve is Seanan with a knife.
Oh, but Seanan with a knife is adorable. Look.
There's a picture from last night's cake cutting.
Hey, how much of the audience wants to see me beat Jim Hines to death with a cane?
I don't want to record. No. I'd rather not record murder for the internet.
Yeah.
What if we squee while she does it?
We can pause the
recording. Murder is strictly off the recording.
No.
Compromise. Pause the recording. Okay.
All five right. Of us are back.
We have a little more time to kill.
Yeah, well, I have a pet peeve, especially, you know, now that, because I have a 12-year-old daughter, and this gets kind of into the female ratio and superhero stuff. Caitlin loves the superhero movies, loves them. I think there's another girl doing yays. And she wants shirts.
She wants merchandise.
She wants the merchandise. She wants the T-shirt. She wants the action figures. We want to buy her these things. And, you know, we go to the Target, and it is very hard to find a Black Widow thing for Caitlin. Oh, she's actually making a sad noise. Yeah, sorry, Kate. So it is tough, and then you look for less
you know, for fan-made stuff, and often it's tough to find things in little kids' sizes or other, you know. We do, but it was the same with the X-Men, because she's a huge X-Men movie fan. And once again, finding any characters on things, any female characters, it's just hard.
Yeah, it's nigh impossible.
I actually have a question.
Okay.
Which is one of the silly questions, but I feel like it's been a long time since any of us answered it. And I think our answers might have changed. What's your current favorite guilty pleasure in SF fandom or media?
Guilty pleasure?
Yeah.
I don't have any guilty
pleasure. Yeah. I am guilty.
Yeah, that's
I can't admit to it, it's not pleasure.
Well, yeah. I'm not. There are things that I don't think are good that I still really enjoy.
Okay, I'll bite. The thing that I don't think is particularly good but I still enjoy the heck out of is True Blood. I find it vastly entertaining. I don't necessarily think it's excellent storytelling all the time, and I don't care, because naked vampires.
Yeah, I've recently started watching the new show. Speaking of gender balance, the new show How to Get Away with Murder, which is Viola Davis and a cast of thousands, which has pretty good gender balance, and also has a really diverse cast and really diverse characters, which I enjoy. But, oh my God, this is pure melodrama. It's, Daniel Jose Older was tweeted this week while watching it, is everybody in this show sleeping with everybody else? And I tweeted back, pretty much, yes. And he's like, yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous, but I'm really enjoying it. It's not healthy. It's not healthy how much I enjoy this show.
I don't feel guilty about it.
All you lawyers are going to jail.
I think that is one thing we developed over. Yeah, I think dropping the guilt from guilty pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I mean, okay, fine.
I guess it's strictly speaking,
yeah,
not
but I
SF.
Understand. Yeah.
But it is really, like, I am a gigantic fan of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh.
Yeah.
I love it forever. And oh my God, there's the Battle of the Seasons is coming to Portland, Maine. Maine. Where you live! Who has two thumbs and two tickets? I love RuPaul, and I know that there are many people who think it's stupid and silly, and reality TV in general is bad, but I think it's absolutely brilliant in the way it mm-hmm. sends up reality TV, and seasons are different quality, but it's one of my favorite things in the world. And I love when little bits of geek culture get into it. They had a mm-hmm. zombie drag queen challenge, and have had many like science fiction galaxy drag queen challenges. They even had a like making a B-grade science fiction movie challenge at one point. I love that show. I will love it forever. It is one of my happy places, but I don't feel guilty about it at all.
Yeah, our current, since we've already left the SF thing, we watch a lot of cooking competition shows on Food Network.
Yeah.
And we these are not high art, and we are never going to recreate these recipes, but we are just so fascinated by who will win Chopped. We must know what they will do with the basket ingredients that we cannot taste or smell.
This is fascinating. Our guilty pleasures, that was air quotes for the listeners at home, are all non-science fiction. Regular people's guilty pleasures are science fiction and fantasy things. Sure. Ours are, oh God, I watch a show everybody else watches.
I am not completely geeky in every endeavor.
Watch a
gaming
or reality
create
show.
The family. Yeah, I was gonna throw out Castle. This mm-hmm. is not a good show.
Why do you have to touch everything?
And yet I watch it because Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
And because maybe this week he'll do another little Firefly reference. Why are you wearing your space cowboy costume, Dad?
I want to know where the hell his partner shops to get those clothes on a cop's budget.
Yeah. She must live near a really good consignment store.
Oh my God, yeah.
She shops with Maria Ivana Headley.
Clearly.
Yeah.
I want to know who Castle's agent is, who's getting him this level.
Okay, who here has actually gotten delivered to their book launch party in a helicopter? Oh, I'm seeing so many hands.
Well, who came to the ISFIC press launch last night? Most of you did not. Yeah, we came in a helicopter.
You missed it.
It was so amazing.
It was like a clown car helicopter.
I just had Michael in the front pedaling really hard.
No.
Very noisy. It's like riding someone else's migraine.
Oh. Michael, it's not a helicopter if you're just riding up in the elevator going.
Yeah. Yeah. Making the little bit of noises. Yeah.
It was a very impressive beanie cap.
Yeah, I mean, I think we almost achieved liftoff headbanging yesterday.
Yes. Yeah, when we played I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue yesterday, for those of you that weren't there, there was one of the segments is that you sing one song to the tune of another. And the final, yeah.
My brain.
And there was another segment where that you sing a song that is well known by the audience and everyone can sing along and then part of it drops out and you have to keep going and try to catch up to where the song comes back. And the one that Shannon had was for Bohemian Rhapsody and it ended, rightly so, with massive headbanging by the entire cast of the game show because that is what you do with Bohemian Rhapsody.
I'm not saying Shannon nailed it, but Shannon nailed it.
Yeah.
Okay, other questions? We've got a couple more minutes. Now's your time. Oh, all the way back.
Four more minutes.
Yeah.
Please project.
We're talking about guilty pleasures. What's your favorite fast food place?
Favorite fast food place? Like that we willingly eat?
How do you define fast food? Does it have to have a drive-thru to be fast food?
I can nail this one.
Okay.
Go for it.
I really like Wendy's Frosties, and I have major issues with Wendy's.
Yeah.
I have not eaten a Frosty in a very long time, but every time I drive past, I hear it calling me.
For Lynn and me, I think it's probably Portillo's, which is one of the Yay, Portillo's fans.
Yeah. Although, if I'm going to eat something that I'm going to regret later, because I never regret eating Portillo's, I never feel so bad after eating it that I regret having consumed it. If it's a thing that I know is going to taste really, really good, and then I will feel like crap afterwards, so I have to, like, book off the rest of the day so that I don't have to, like, think or be functional, it's White Castle.
White Castle kills brain cells.
Yes, it does. But, man, it tastes good.
For me, it's specific. I live in central Massachusetts, and my partner lives in western Wisconsin. And this means that I spend an inordinate amount of my life in Midway Airport. Hi, Midway! And there's a Ben & Jerry's there. That is my ridiculous, self-indulgent, this is full of chemicals, but I'm going to eat it anyway, treat. That is my reward for doing the Southwest Airlines cattle call. And right now they have this caramel blondie swirl thing that, I recommend highly. You won't be able to fit in your airplane seat afterwards, but it'll be worth it.
So I've been trying to think as everyone else is talking, and I think that the honest-to-God answer, and it is fun to make sentences like this, is I really love dicks. Dick's is a burger joint in Seattle where I grew up. As I think it's only in the Western Washington area there. In my memory it's nothing but 70s orange and brown. And then I went like 5 years ago and it is absolutely as I remember it. It has not had new decorations since the 70s. And they have amazing milkshakes, like blackberry milkshakes, and fantastic fries and burgers, and I get so excited when I go home and see dicks.
Those Seattle dicks, they're not like the dicks anywhere else.
It's true, I know.
No, apparently they're orange.
And they have kind of a 70s vibe.
With a blackberry flavor.
Nothing says home like driving out for dicks.
Shannon, do you have a favorite fast food?
My favorite quick service as opposed to table service restaurant is Gaston's in New Fantasyland because for some insane reason you can still turn one snack credit on your deluxe dining plan into a pig leg like the length of your femur. It's not a meal credit. It's a snack credit. Disney rates this on a level with a bottle of water. But it's a pig leg the length of your femur, and if you hit someone with the bone after you've sucked the marrow dry, they notice. Let's go to Disney World.
Yes, please.
Person. Bye.
Person, what?
It's a long walk, but sacrifice
we have time for like two more questions.
We can probably
see you back there, Mr. Lynch. We've got two more questions left, so you're going to go first, and then we're going to dare to let Scott Lynch close us out.
No!
This could go horribly wrong,
I have
just
an
so you know. Go right ahead.
I guess I'm continuing the guilty pleasure theme, kind of. When you really enjoy something, but it has a major flaw, how does reconciling that go in your brain? Like, I know I've been reading up Brandon Sanderson, and you write good women, why are there one of them to every 7 to 10 men? It's the one that comes to mind.
Ah, the enjoying problematic things question. Yes. How do we enjoy problematic things? Carefully is the short answer.
Mindfully.
Recognizing, this has some problems, but it's also cool, and I like the cool, while acknowledging this thing over here is effed up.
For me, it's basically a percentages game. Like, what is the percentage of this thing that made me sad and upset versus the percentage that made me happy? And it's a ratio. Like, if it teeters over into I'm just upset, then it doesn't matter about the other cool stuff in it. I can't really get over it. But as long as, like, a 1-to-3 ratio is maintained, I can still like it. But when somebody asks me what I think, I won't be able to not say, but on the other hand, there is this thing, and it's hard for me to look past it. But I try.
Or you can just, join a podcast that allows you to get that stuff out of your system.
Everybody gets one.
Gets a podcast, which is...
What's my Squeakcast catchphrase? First novel problems?
First novel problems, yes. We're going to put that on a t-shirt.
I am not the target demographic for this novel.
Yeah.
I've actually run into this a few times recently where people would send me books to blurb, and I read them, and it's like, this is a good book, this is enjoyable, this is a lot of fun, it's well written. I can't blurb it because of this thing. I can recognize that it's a good book and it's enjoyable on these other levels, but I'm not comfortable with my name on the cover.
Yeah, I use the not my cup of tea phrase an awful lot, where there will be things that I enjoy that are problematic, and again, it's the percentages game. Where is everyone's line for I'm just done with this property is in a different place, and you have to sort of figure out where that is for yourself. But there are times where I will read something or consume something and just be like, this is just not for me. This is not for me, and that's okay. It's clearly for someone else who is not me. I will go find something that is for me, because the things that are for me make me happier.
Yeah,
I don't page watch things.
I refer to that as the eject button.
Yeah,
there's which can either be the VCR or the aircraft. You pick. So are we gonna let Scott talk?
I guess we should let Scott talk. What could possibly go wrong?
Maniacal grin on his face. Yeah. Are you sure?
I'm contemplating your reaction.
Bring it.
Get the camera ready.
It's the way he says Jim that worries me.
I'm being a team player. I'm being a good citizen. I'm giving you a question. Assuming that Paul Cornell, the much missed, much lamented, Paul Cornell was actually here in this room right now, Paul Cornell will be listening to this, presumably at some point in the near future.
Yes.
If he were here in this room, let me been subjected to hypnosis, such that he must either perform a command or answer a question, one from each member of the Squeakcast currently sitting up there, plus their little buddy Jim. Would you do with Paul Cornell?
And the award for best question ever asked of the Squeakcast.
I'm stumped.
He's yours for once. One question, one command. Come on, there must be. I do things.
So Scott, you've thought about this more than I have.
I've heard Paul Cornell sing Wuthering Heights to the tune of the Star Spangled Banner. So I don't feel there's anything I could ask him to do that would top what he did voluntarily in London.
He was singing it to the tune of the Star Spangled Banner.
Jim?
I would say, Mr. Cornell, there is a gentleman in the back room. With gorgeous hair. Bring it to me.
Bring me the hair of Scott
Lynch. That was also a potential title.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, I've already made him say dirty words repeatedly on the podcast, so I'm pretty much done.
Yeah. I could go for like a vaudeville soft shoe number.
Yeah.
Paul.
Dancing Paul.
That would
yes.
be great.
We could make Paul dance because that could possibly not go wrong in the context of a podcast.
Actually, having Paul do the entire Make Them Laugh from Singing in the Rain number.
Doing his best Donald O'Connor.
Yes. I could go for that.
Yeah, that could work. Do we have a spinning room? Because that's kind of necessary.
Well, I think Paul could probably
walk up.
He'll
make the attempt.
Yeah.
He'll make the attempt to walk up the walls.
He
yes.
can walk up walls, yes. He's Paul.
He's Paul. He can do anything. I think that's all we have. We're now done.
Oh, thank God.
Okay, so at this point, we are just about out of time. Thank goodness. So
no, we had fun.
We had a great time. So, WindyCon, thank you for having us. And now's the part where I do the little outro. So thanks to our regular contributors, Seanan, Kat, Michael, Bear, and our special guest, Jim Hines, for joining us. Special thanks to our webmaster, Dimitri Zagadulin, our technical producer, David McCone-Chase, Jeff Bonhoff at Mystic Fig Studios for the instrumentals of music by Seanan McGuire. Thanks to Katie Shuttleworth, who made our rockin' logo, and thanks to Michael Damian Thomas for general administrative support. We hope that you will join us next time. Same squee time, same squee channel. All right, Seanan, you're furthest from the mic. Can I ask you to
That's
say something?
Correct.
One more time?
What?
Perfect.